Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Sod 2, For the Record program number 711, interview with Russ Baker, author of Family of Secrets. This program is being recorded on May 23rd of the year 2010. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Russ Baker, the author of Family of Secrets. Russ, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thanks, Dave.
Let's jump right in. We were talking about Douglas MacArthur and how he networked with some of the American power elite, as C. Wright Mills called it. And let's talk about Poppy and the Photo Reconnaissance Group and Naval Intelligence.
Well, I mean, essentially what you had was Poppy, or George H.W. Bush, the 41st president of the United States, leaving his prep school and going right into flight as a naval bomber pilot, and also very much involved with this top secret naval reconnaissance work. This was very, very important, and these were precursors of elements like the CIA that would emerge after the war. And so he was already being trained in intelligence work. A big part, by the way, of Family of Secrets, at least the first half, is about what I discovered as a secret life of Poppy Bush, that he had a life that has never been reported on, that is not in his memoirs or not in any books about him, and that is that long before he became the CIA director in 1976, by the way, he was appointed by Gerald Ford, and at the time, if you go back and look at the clippings, the media were sort of scratching their heads saying, "Huh, I wonder why this guy is CIA director," but they don't scratch their heads very extensively. They don't really look that deeply into any of these things, so they said, well, he was a young congressman, up and coming, and likable, and seemed to be clean and so on, and the CIA was embroiled in scandal, and so, well, they put this guy in to sort of, put a fresh face on there, and that was that. But I wondered about that. And I wondered about a number of other clues I'd come upon, and so I began studying him. And as I studied him, I found that all of these periods prior to that, his activities seemed to be juxtaposed with very profound American events. And I hope either on this or on a future show we'll have time to talk about this, all of these curiosities surrounding the assassination of John F. Kennedy. But in any case, you see this going all the way back to his days in World War II, and then right after the war, where he begins working for the family-owned Dresser Industries, where he's again doing what looks to be an intelligence type of work. He then starts his own company, and as I reveal in Family of Secrets, he started an offshore drilling company, a rather obscure one, with quite a bit of money from interested parties in Washington, and with the help of a man who was himself a young CIA officer who purportedly resigned from the agency in order to join Mr. Bush in the offshore drilling business. And then you begin to see them putting rigs in strategic locations like just right off of Cuba prior to the Bay of Pigs invasion.
Now, was that Thomas Devine?
Yes.
Okay. Again, an individual, and when you interviewed him, he had some very interesting things to say about your methodology, and not a person I would want to sit down and talk to face-to-face in a mini editorial contribution. More about Zapata Petroleum, and again, the Kennedy assassination is something we can probably, it was what started me on my life's work, looking into the events of 11-22-63 and Watergate, because they're inextricably linked. We can do an entire program, probably two or three, about just the Kennedy assassination. We could do one, I think, just about George de Morenchild, the oil industry, and the deep politics going back to the Russian, the Bolshevik Revolution, the period between the wars, and the deep networking there. But talking about Zapata Petroleum, and everywhere, I want to stress that everywhere one looks with Poppy Bush, and it's illustrated very dramatically in Family of Secrets, one finds the hallmarks of intelligence. Zapata Petroleum appears to have been, however much oil they did or did not drill, it appears to have been in many ways an intelligence front. Develop that. And also, there's a name that is prominent in the history of the Bush family and prominent in the history of these power networks, and that is Alan Dulles and the Dulles family. So let's talk about Zapata as an intelligence front, and let's talk about the Dulleses and how they figure in the Bush family narrative.
Well, let me again just step back to talk about the general issue and the current relevancy of all of this. we're not talking about ancient history here. We're talking about continuities of power and power relationships. And basically nothing has changed. The Central Intelligence Agency is largely devoted, not exclusively, but it's largely devoted to providing information of use to large corporate and financial interests. It's always been that way. The CIA was actually founded by, the blueprint for the CIA was created by a guy named Robert Lovett. Robert Lovett was, again, Yale, skull and bones, a business partner with Prescott Bush in Brown Brothers Harriman. And the first CIA director under Eisenhower, not the first CIA director, there were several who were in there briefly, but the first significant one who had a very, very long tenure was Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles, again, from a family that were connected back into the Bushes. Alan Dulles and his brother John Foster Dulles were attorneys with a prominent white shoe law firm that represented, and therefore they sat on the boards of such companies as United Fruit, Standard Fruit, some of these giant copper mining companies and what have you that were in all of these foreign countries extracting resources very, very cheaply and also putting considerable effort into putting down domestic uprisings where the locals were complaining, basically, why are these people able to take, what is our birthright so cheaply, pay almost nothing for it, pay almost nothing in the way of taxes. This is just, this is just totally wrong. And so the Dulleses were very involved with that. If you go back, you find out that Alan Dulles appears to have gotten involved in intelligence back in World War One, and then his uncle was in the Wilson administration, was in his cabinet. And so, again, these families, very, very linked. The Dulleses, actually, you mentioned Episcopalians, were Presbyterians, and they came out of another circle, which was based at Princeton. So it's another sort of a network, if you will, but they worked very well with the Bushes, and they worked very well with Rockefeller, who was a Baptist. And so you see these different circles. You see the Harvard circle and so forth, and you see other elements. You see Jews and members of all kinds of different religions, Methodists and what have you, Catholics certainly through orders like the Knights of Malta, which William Casey, later CIA director under Reagan, was a member of that secret order. So all of these entities working together, very much advancing the interest of wealthy American families and powerful corporations in terms of foreign policy. And this was largely the agenda of these intelligence agencies. And, of course, the public never understood this because there was never much scrutiny of it. And, of course, their activities are all secret, and even only a few members of Congress to this day are allowed to even begin to ask any questions. And even they are given a runaround. As you may recall, Nancy Pelosi complained that she felt she had been tricked at where she was giving these briefings on policies tantamount to torture, that she really didn't understand what she was being told, and she really was not being given the whole story. And I think that's probably true.
By the way, a couple of elements of nomenclature. Sullivan and Cromwell, of course, is the Dulles law firm. And Alan Dulles' uncle, I believe, was Robert Lansing, Secretary of State under Woodrow Wilson.
That's right, yeah.
By the way, today, the Sullivan and Cromwell firm is a general counsel for Saudi bin Laden Group. We hear about Osama bin Laden as, he's stigmatized in all kinds of ways. He is a member of one of the most powerful families on earth, but that's a subject perhaps for another program or 10. Let's go back to Zapata Petroleum and the curious places that they turn up with their, some of their offshore rigs. I guess one could perhaps say that they were rigging the political landscape.
Well, what's interesting with there was Zapata Petroleum, a firm started by Poppy Bush with, very interestingly, two brothers named Ledke, who ended up having a company later called Pennzoil. A very, very successful oil company. But the three of them started this company, little tiny company, in Midland, Odessa, Texas, West Texas. And then Poppy started this offshoot, Zapata Offshore, And he begins this very curious odyssey, which I describe in some detail in Family of Secrets. I managed to obtain enough documents where I could see him traveling around the world, and I thought, my gosh, this is a tiny, tiny company. They're not making any money. They're actually losing money in most years, and yet he's traveling all over the world. And, you know, they've only got a few rigs. You have to understand the way these companies work. They basically, what they do is they get financing to get a few rigs built or leased or what have you, and then in turn, they will lease those rigs to other companies. That's what you see with the blowout in the Gulf of Mexico, where the drilling is for BP, but it's not their rig.
Transocean is the firm that owns it.
That's right. That's right. And then another company is doing the cementing and so forth. And so it's all contracted out. In any case, Zapata Petroleum was really almost nothing as far as a company. And yet, here's this man traveling all over the world to many, many places where they didn't seem to be doing any business, places that were landlocked, where there were no offshore drilling opportunities and no clear investment opportunities for them. Very, very mysterious. And so it looks like it's cover for something else. We do see when they put rigs up, they put them in places like off of the Bay of off of Cuba prior to the Bay of Pigs invasion. We see them employing Cuban exiles. We see them working, being hired to put those rigs there on an island controlled by Howard Hughes, who had his own connections into the intelligence community, and then it being leased by Gulf Oil, on whose board was a man named Kermit Roosevelt. I hope I'm not throwing out too many names here.
Nope.
But Kermit Roosevelt, from, of course, the famous Roosevelt family, he was a CIA officer who was one of the key figures in the overthrow of President Mossadegh in Iran, the democratically elected president who was threatening the interests of, ta-da, BP.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you talk about, too, I just was fascinated. Some of these power networks travel across the congressional aisle, and conservative Democrats such as Lyndon Baines Johnson and people like Poppy Bush and also Alan Dulles were very closely networking. One of the fascinating details, and I posted this as a food for thought, by the way, on in the news and supplemental section of my website. By the way, that's SpitfireList.com. One of the fascinating details, one of many fascinating points you bring up in Family of Secrets, Russ Baker, and that is the town Medellin in Colombia has become very well known in recent years for the epic cocaine trafficking, that in turn overlapping the Iran-Contra affair in which Poppy Bush figures. Who was picked to head up the Zapata offshore petroleum rig off of Medellin, Colombia?
Well, actually, it's even stranger than that. What I found was, first of all, one of the many revelations, literally hundreds, perhaps even thousands of revelations in Family of Secrets, is a little-known, extremely close relationship between the Bushes and Lyndon Baines Johnson. And that's very, very important, not just in terms of the context of what was happening at the time that John F. Kennedy was assassinated and Lyndon Baines Johnson ascended to the throne, and Poppy Bush's role on the Ways and Means Committee in creating legislation favorable to the oil industry, Johnson's connections to the oil industry, and on and on and on. But you see this actual personal friendship, very, very close, between Poppy, his father Prescott, and Lyndon Baines Johnson. And then you see that Zapata opens an office in Medellin. Now, I should point out that Medellin is not on the coast. If you look at the map, it's several hours from the coast. So it doesn't seem, you know, if you had an offshore drilling company, presumably, you know, there are cities right on the coast that's where you would put your office. Or perhaps if you wanted to be in a big city, you'd put it in the capital, Bogota, but they didn't. They put it in this peculiar place, and they hired a man named Manuel Bravo to run that office. Now, Manuel Bravo was a judge in a tiny county that was absolutely crucial in LBJ's highly contested election to the U.S. Senate. Many believe, and this has been widely written about, that LBJ basically stole that election, having some people rig it. And one of the people who there was the issue of stuffing the ballot box was Judge Manuel Bravo. And so after that, you see the Bushes giving him a job in this highly improbable place, in this highly improbable institution.
One of the events that you link Poppy Bush to in a big way, and this we could do at least an hour, probably probably several on just this aspect of your book, and that is the assassination of President Kennedy. I'd like you to, we'll cover most of this in a future program because we're almost halfway through this side, but the George Bush of the CIA, the warning that was sent to the FBI on 11-22-63, and the question that Ted Kennedy asked at the 1988 Democratic Convention about Poppy Bush and the Iran-Contra scandal, where was George? Those 3 points. George Bush of the CIA, Mr. Parrott, and where, in fact, was George H.W. Bush on 11-22-63?
Well, that's quite a mouthful, and I developed that material in more than 4 chapters.
Right.
Of all new material related to the Kennedy assassination in Family of Secrets. So we can only begin to just barely scratch the surface.
Sure.
Essentially what happened was, just to back way up, I began Family of Secrets trying to understand what the phenomenon of George W. Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and all this state of sort of perpetual war in the Mideast and all these other controversial things, suspensions of civil liberties, constant state of sort of terror, if you will, what this all meant and the enormous amounts of money that very, very wealthy and savvy Americans invested in a man of clearly somewhat limited talents. They wanted him there, and I wondered why. And this brought me to this notion of the Bush family as being seen by these extended networks as crucial sort of soldiers on their behalf. W, his father Poppy, the grandfather Prescott, the great-grandfather Samuel, and so on. And that was very revealing to me. And then I began studying the relationship between W and his father, Poppy, because W would never have become president, obviously, if his father had not already been a brand name. Certainly couldn't have made it on his own. And so I began looking at the father, and the more I looked at the father, the more I found this secret history, and I found this explanation that when he was made CIA director in 76 as a neophyte, that was a false story, that he actually was put in as part of an ongoing cover-up of what the CIA had actually been up to, and that was because he himself was CIA prior. And I lay out the evidence of that in Family of Secrets, you pointed out about Zapata offshore and so forth. And so then we have him in all these years in between, in the 1960s, and what's he doing? Well, he's a private oil man, and he's getting involved in Republican Party politics. But I run across this odd fact, which is how he just avoids talking about the biggest event of the 60s, the biggest event certainly of 1963, the assassination of John F. Kennedy in Texas. Keep in mind that the elder Bush is a Texan at that point. He is actually running for political office in Texas, a national political office. He's running for the U.S. Senate nomination from Texas, basically opposing the policies of John F. Kennedy. So when I look at his published diaries and memoirs, and I see that he has the most minute events and so on, and we get to November 63, and he just completely skips it altogether. And then I hear that he'd been interviewed and was asked, just very in a very benign sense, somebody asked him to recall what happened when Kennedy was shot and how he felt about it. And they asked him, you know, to recall where he was and so on, and he just drew a blank. He could not remember where he was on November 22, 1963. And so that, of course, is such an astonishing thing for somebody who was probably about 40 years old at the time. And so I thought, boy, you know, what is that about? And I began trying to understand that. And this took me, Dave, no kidding, parallel to my other research, 4 or 5 years of digging into the Kennedy assassination as it relates to just where was Poppy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I have to say that I am not what you would call a Kennedy assassination buff. Didn't really know a lot about it, didn't have an extensive library on the topic, didn't really have any position on it. One heard that perhaps Oswald had done it, perhaps he had done it alone, perhaps he hadn't, perhaps other people involved. There are a lot of different theories out there. But generally, most professional journalists stay away from the topic because it seems to be a sort of professional quicksand.
That's why I went into what I went into at the beginning of the interview. Continue.
Yeah, and so I, you know, stayed away from it. I just didn't see any reason to get into it. But now I felt compelled to answer this question. And when I began trying to answer it, I started coming upon bits and pieces of things. And then as I started knowing what I was looking for, it gradually grew and grew and grew until it was a torrent. And at this point, I started calling friends of mine, including a Pulitzer Prize winner at a major American newspaper, and I'd say, come to lunch, I need to talk to you. And I'd say, I'm starting to get alarmed here. I'm starting to find things that are so big and so disturbing. They're way beyond even the things that I, somebody who's really been, you know, very tough on the system all these years, that's it's too big for me. And I would show them these things, and I'd say, you know, I think there's a reason that this guy says he can't remember where he is. He cannot say where he was. And I would show them what I had, and they would start getting scared, and they'd say, boy, you better be careful. This is dangerous stuff. And so, you know, I had my nightmares. I had my panic attacks, I guess, but I kept persisting, and I kept looking into this, and I began finding all of these fascinating facts, and you alluded to a few of them. We can only go into them very briefly now, and perhaps more, as you said, on a future program, but basically, you start finding out that there were all these interesting activities on the part of Mr. Bush, on the part of a whole bunch of friends and colleagues and associates of his in the CIA, in Army Intelligence, oil industry figures, powerful right-wing businessmen in Dallas. All these people were friends, and they were all connected. They all had a tremendous amount of animosity for John F. Kennedy and for the policies that he was carrying out. And this actually caused me to even rethink John Kennedy himself. Because, you know, I'd heard all of these things. A lot of people described him as, they said he really was no liberal, he was a cold warrior, he was this, he was that. But as I began looking into all these things and studying him carefully, I began to see that actually he was much more of a reformer and a risk taker than I think a lot of people realize, that both he and his brother were fearlessly and almost recklessly taking on simultaneously many of the major power centers in America. In other words, instead of just taking on, say, one at a time, as Barack Obama is doing, they were taking on everyone. They were angering the military. They were fighting with the CIA. They fired Alan Dulles. They angered Prescott Bush. They were not playing ball with the oil industry. They were not playing ball with a large American multinationals, with mines in foreign countries.
Civil rights.
Civil rights, the steel industry. They were fighting with J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI.
Organized crime.
And this goes on and on and on. They were going after everybody. I mean, if you look at it, it sort of seems either crazy or just phenomenally courageous, or both.
Well, you go into just great length about what Poppy Bush was doing in Dallas, Texas on November 22nd, 1963, and how he dissembled. Russ Baker, author of Family of Secrets, subtitled The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years. We haven't, sadly, got 50 years left to cover this. I think we could probably do it if we could both live long enough and sustain our stamina. We've got less than 8 minutes. What I'd like to do would be, and if we have to take a pass on some of these points, let's do so and table these for future interviews, because we could do an awful lot of interviews, and I'd like to do many interviews in the future, staggered over time. Let's take some bullet points, and perhaps that's an advised term under the circumstances. In his book, The Ends of Power, H.R. Haldeman described the whole Bay of Pigs thing, which is what Nixon didn't want to come out in Watergate, as a code word within the Nixon White House, so the Kennedy assassination. Poppy Bush, the intelligence community, and Watergate. What do you have to say about that?
Oh, boy. Well, this was another area where, despite having covered politics and done investigative reporting on power spheres for several decades, I didn't consider myself very expert on Watergate. And I think a lot of us kind of, if we're old enough, we vaguely remember, and of course, you know, the bad guys, Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and what have you, John Dean is this sort of complex figure, you know, who sort of, you know, kind of turned prosecution witness and blew the whistle on the thing and so on. And, you know, Woodward and Bernstein as the great journalistic heroes who brought down an out-of-control president and so on. And I got into this whole thing for Family of Secrets because now I was on the trail of George H.W. Bush, Poppy Bush, or Bush 41, already had established, to my satisfaction, that he appeared to be have involved in covert intelligence activities long before he was named CIA director and when he had a very different titles, congressman, oilman, diplomat, and so forth. And so I was very interested in him. And then I followed his rise his own political rise. And I was struck by the fact that Richard Nixon was very much instrumental in that. And I wondered why Richard Nixon went to such lengths to help Poppy Bush. And I discovered, and I think we should table for a future conversation, the backstory, the secret back relationship between the Bush family and their circle and the rise of Richard Nixon, the control of Richard Nixon, how Richard Nixon was basically shaped and dominated by these elite interests throughout his political career until such time as he became president of the United States. And what I reveal in several chapters in Family of Secrets is that Nixon began trying to become independent. And
we're down to less than 5 minutes now. I want to stress that there is no way we can even begin to really do justice. We could spend several interviews just about the Kennedy assassination, or just about Watergate, or just about W. Let's touch briefly on Harkin Energy and how it grew out of a couple of intelligence and drug smuggling connected banks, BCCI and the Nugenhand Bank. Just very briefly, if you can. And if not, we'll table that for future.
Okay, let me just go as general as I can here. I mean, basically what we're looking at is intelligence operations are tremendously expensive, and they largely involve moving money around, huge amounts of money, billions and billions and billions of dollars that have to be all untraceable and unaccountable, used for operations, used for bribery, used for all kinds of things. And so they create these front companies. There are lots and lots and lots of them, hundreds of them, thousands of them, front companies or enterprises put inside of legitimate companies for cover. And so this is crucial, little known, little examined. I began looking at a company called Harkin Energy, which was instrumental in the rise of George W., our most recent past president. This company was instrumental in securing his financial future, giving him some credentials, and basically taking some failing companies that he was involved with and taking them over and thereby making him appear to be a successful businessman, which was absolutely crucial shortly thereafter when he began running for governor of Texas. So Harkin Energy was an interesting company. Other journalists had looked at Harkin over the years, Time Magazine, the Wall Street Journal, and so on. They all concluded that this was a very, very strange outfit because the numbers didn't make any sense. And without going into too much detail, it seemed to exist for some purpose other than making money for shareholders. And so in Family of Secrets, I have a whole chapter just on Harkin, go into, you know, who were the people involved. And again, no time here, but basically they trace back to links to all of these international power centers, the kleptocratic Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos, the very wealthy interests in South Africa that subjugated the black population, the bloodthirsty Shah of Iran, who again stole vast amounts of money from the Iranian people, setting up the current animosities between Iran and the United States, which are seldom discussed as we talk about whether we should be waging war with the theocratic regime there, and others, Saudis, and on and on and on. And so what was this company?
Russ, let me just jump in ever so briefly, because we're going to run out of time. And we could do many programs about Harkin Energy. As with Zapata, I guess one could say ostensibly oil company, the holes are greater than the sum of the parts. We are down to less than a minute. You write about Mickey Herskowitz, a Bush family crony journalist. What did he have? What do you write about what he said George W. Bush was thinking about in the late 1990s? We've got 45 seconds left.
Okay, basically, Bush told him when they were writing a book together back then that the only thing he could think of that he wanted to do as president of the United States was to invade Iraq.
And to start a war, for you, he felt that would enable him to give him political capital, which he could then spend. We have been speaking with Russ Baker, the author of the landmark book, Family of Secrets. A lot of people are asking, it's a political election season, well, what can I do? One of the things you can do is to buy this book, read it, and disseminate the information via talk shows and the Internet. Russ, tell us about your websites.
Okay, the more important of the two would probably be whowhatwhy.com. That is a nonprofit, a nonpartisan investigative reporting site where we're continuing to look into stories today, the spheres of influence that are pressing down upon President Obama and the United States government as we go forward.
That book is Family of Secrets. The author is Russ Baker, with whom we have been speaking. And this concludes For the Record 711, being recorded on May 23rd of the year 2010. For Russ Baker, this is Dave Emery saying, thanks for listening.